This is where sports talk can be more entertaining than the sport itself. Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yes, you can sit in there. You can sit in there for the whole show if you like. Quit your belly aching. Put up with this nonsense. Bob McCown here and...
Careful.
Damien Cox over there.
Careful.
So what's with your newspaper? Didn't give us any credit. Didn't even mention... Just stole the quotes.
What?
At least the Toronto Sun... And it's half Toronto Star people working here. And the Toronto Sun, who has almost nobody working. I mean, they gave us a nice...
What credit did you give anybody in the Toronto Star for any of the work they did today? What do you need credit for? Just do the work. Let people ingest it as they will.
Ingest?
You big baby. I hear Anthopoulos isn't coming in. He said we are too hard on Burke. He's not coming in.
Do you think you were too hard on him, or was I too hard on him?
I thought it was a good conversation.
All right.
You're always worried that people are going to say you're light on people. And the point that I make to you and that you've made before and will make again is that when people come in, our thinking is that people want to hear what they have to say.
It's
not more about what we think.
Burke knows what we've said. He's not dumb. What?
There goes the guy you were just yelling at.
Oh, thing?
Yep.
Wonder where he's going. Going the wrong direction. You work over there.
And the other thing is, Burke doesn't care what you think, and he certainly doesn't care what I think.
No, I think that's pretty much the truth.
So he's coming on here to tell people what he thinks.
Well, I think that's what the fan, isn't that what you would want as a listener? You'd want to know, okay, Burke's in, let's hear what he has to say.
No.
You need to hear what I have to say?
Anyways, everybody's all upset about
I'd really be much happier if we could do this show without listeners.
Most of the time.
Because they are annoying.
You've got to stay off Twitter.
I'm done. I'm finished. Well, there's the pot calling the kettle.
No.
You can't stay off it. You're tweeting in the middle of the show, for God's sake.
I never tweet during the show.
Your thumbs were going like a wild man the other day.
I'm exchanging emails with loved ones.
Oh. You have some of those?
Yes, I have some.
Your kiddies?
Yes.
Well, your bride, too, probably.
Well, she's undecided. She's among the undecided.
I'm with her. She's, among other things, she's very bright. And a wonderful judge. Well, she may not be that good a judge. She married you.
Well, it was too bad that... I'm going to just move on and ignore all that. It's too bad we didn't have this piece of information when Burke was in yesterday. And that is, apparently, this season in the National Hockey League, fighting is down. Guess how much it's down by?
50%. I know that.
No, not 50.
Yes, it is.
No.
Well,
no.
It was, there was one.
No.
Wait.
But it's.
Okay, one third.
It's down. You're still wrong. I thought you were going to guess a low number. So you're going to be disappointed. It's down by 25%.
Well, wait. I saw the numbers and reported them on this program.
Well.
It was something like 1.2 fights per game, and it's now down to 0.8 fights per game. That's more than 25%.
No,
the guys are.
There's a story in USA Today. Anyway,
you're citing USA Today as the source for hockey information?
No, they just ran some numbers they got from the NHL.
Well, we have some numbers. We're going to give the numbers.
Well, how old is this show? It's 4 minutes old. I've got a migraine already.
Well,
are you going to be this disagreeable the entire show?
Plan on it. I wasn't expecting you here because it's Thursday. I mean, this is 2 days in a row I have to put up with you. I was hoping for another off day.
So, if we can move on.
I was hoping Elliot or Shannon could do the
show. I want you to tell me.
Is Brent still alive?
Oh, author of the greatest hockey book ever written that you didn't really write, but Dave Naylor did, but you won't tell anybody that?
He's on the cover.
Yeah. You know, I never hear you mention his name.
I mentioned him often. He's he's my pal. We are joined at the pen.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, at the pen.
Why is fighting down? They haven't changed the rules. What's changed? What's new?
I don't know. You tell me.
No, no, no. You tell me.
No, I can't tell you.
Why?
Matter of national security.
Anyways, I would have been interested what Burke had to say.
Well, I don't know the answer to that. So do you know the answer to that? Why is fighting down?
I don't know. I really don't. I assume some of it may have to do with the fact that maybe people are finally wising up to the fact this is dangerous business. People get hurt really badly.
I'm not sure that's the case. How about this scenario? Fewer goons are playing. Those that are on rosters are spending more time in the press box than on the ice. Now, this is a theory. I have no statistical basis for this.
Right. Well, I mean,
Here's my observation. Just from the Toronto Maple Leafs standpoint.
Yeah.
Rose Hill, who's one of the thugs, well, a guy who'll fight.
Not playing.
Who's the guy they just...
Colton Orr.
Was hurt, but not playing.
Leafs are 24th in the NHL in fights.
Not enough truculence on
this
team.
Not enough belligerence or pugnacity.
None of those things.
Now, at the other end of the argument...
Yes.
Who do you think's the number one fighting team in the National Hockey League?
Well, I'd say the toughest and most physical team is the Boston Bruins, but I don't know if they're I don't think they're the number one fighters.
Who do you think is?
God, I'm thinking.
It's only a two-hour show. Come on.
Okay, I give. New York Rangers?
And they are also the number one team. So, Don Cherry follower would say...
connect those dots,
see? Well, no, I'm just saying. He would say, see, you bring in the goons, you shoot up the standings. Now, the problem with that is, do you know who the number two team in fights is in the NHL?
Tampa.
Columbus.
Oh, really?
No, they're not very good. They're not very good at all.
You think?
So I don't know what to think of these numbers. I think it's good. I also can't say that it won't bounce back. Remember after the lockout,
Ryan, where are those numbers? So I can correct Damien.
I think there were 697 fighting majors in the NHL at this point last season, and there are 500 and something so far this year.
I can't even read this.
Here, give it to me.
Why does it have 6:30 and 12:30? Oh, is this a projection? This is projected. Oh, okay. Well, here you can read. I can't figure it out. It's a dog's breakfast. That's not what I saw the other day. What I saw was 1.2 per game down to 0.8 per game. So that would be a 33% reduction in the total number of fights. Now, maybe there are a whole bunch of fights in the last week.
Well, this is hard to figure out.
I told you. I don't know what it means. Here, hold it up for the camera. Let people at home figure it out.
Right.
Here, you look at it. There. You try and figure it out. Jen, get a shot of that. If you're watching on TV, you can figure it out. I don't think they can read that, Jen.
We got to get a lot closer. There you go.
Hey. Like,
are they getting it?
Like the McKenzie brothers. Zoom in on me.
There you go.
You figure that one out.
There it is.
Is it up? Is it down? Is it sideways?
We've given you the information.
Make of it what you will.
Anyways, it's way down.
That's good. I'm pleased. But I'm not anti-fighting, though. See, that's the whole thing.
You're not anti-fighting?
No, not really.
Our friend Anthopoulos just walked in.
Yeah.
He's wearing a garish pink tie.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about it.
There he is. See, you can see him through there.
What does a pink tie go with, Anthopoulos?
See, look at that.
What does it go with? Nothing. Nothing. Greek boy with a pink tie.
The Greek boy who can't find a restaurant on the Danforth, he says.
Yeah, when he needs Greek food, he goes to Montreal. How to endear yourself to the fan
Look
base.
At him. You can see all the money falling out of his pockets that he hasn't spent on ball players.
He's coming in a minute.
Or not.
Or maybe not. Maybe not. Oh, here's stunningly good news. Bud the Dinosaur Selig has extended his contract. He will now be the commissar of baseball for... That's a good word. I like
you
that.
You think he's a bad commissar?
No, he's doing okay. I'm not a big Bud fan. He's easy to make fun of. But he, you know what?
Who's your fave?
Commish?
Yeah. You like Faye Vincent.
Oh, of all time?
Yeah. And don't tell me Kennesaw Mountain Landis. I know you didn't know him.
I had no idea who he... Well, I know he was commissioner, but...
He was the guy who in the Black Sox scandal.
Well, of course, it was an all too brief reign. But Bart Giamatti had all of
the... That's who I was going to say.
Had all of the qualifications and all... And the things that he talked about in the early... He was commissioner for, what, 30 days?
Is that all it was?
Yeah. And all the things he talked about were the kinds of things that resonated with me. He then passes and Faye takes over for Bart. And Faye felt much as a Lyndon Johnson claimed he felt, that he was a caretaker for John F. Kennedy's presidency, that Giamatti's departure meant Faye Vincent was the caretaker for Bart Giamatti. So he was going to try and do all the things that Bart Giamatti wanted to do.
And I think, tell me if you agree with this, that Vincent was the last commissioner to really embody the spirit that of Bowie Kuhn, in that he would invoke the best interests of baseball. That he, even though he was hired by the owners and worked for the owners, there was a sense there was
of independence.
And of a better, for the betterment of the game, a little bit, anyways.
But you know, we
and I know Marvin Miller and Don Fehr would say that's not true, blah, blah.
No,
but
no.
There was a sense of that. And since then, I don't think anybody would say that about Bud Selig.
No. Having said that, look, you know, Faye's been on this program on many, many occasions.
Excellent guest.
And one of the things I respect most about him is that he has consistently talked about one of his failings. In 1989, I believe it was 89, came in as commissioner. They had a study done that suggested there was drug use in baseball. And he did not pursue it. At least did not pursue it as vigorously as he should have. And he is the first to acknowledge. I mean, I remember the day he mentioned it to us for the first time, because we were obviously talking about bonds or the drugs situation in baseball. It was a few years ago. And he said, you know, I have to take some responsibility because, you know, we had some information back in 1989 and, you know, we didn't pursue it. And he said, I should have. And so, I mean, you gain a certain level of respect for somebody.
Sure.
When they will fall on their sword.
So he's sticking around. Selig's sticking around. And he's still hoping that there's going to be a wild card team added this year, but that is not yet a done deal. Maybe our friend Alex will be able to enlighten us on that. But
I'm sorry. I say that again. I was reading.
They're supposed to be adding a wild card team.
Oh, well.
But whether it will be for this year, this coming season.
They have until, I believe the date is March 31st in order to decide, which is effectively the day before the season starts. Now, how you can go that long. Well, I guess it doesn't matter. You're going to play the games whether you play them or not, right?
Right.
Theoretically, you can't start a season and then invoke a change in the playoff format. But they think you could invoke a change the day before the season starts. Do you agree? Let me ask you another question, because that one obviously is too difficult for you. So currently there are...
I'm sorry.
How many teams in the National League? 16. Thanks.
16.
And how many in the American League? 14.
14.
So now you have an...
Does that include Houston?
No. No.
Because Houston hasn't moved.
But 1 year from now, Houston will move over, and then 15, it'll be 15-15. Do you think it's important that you don't make changes to the playoff structure while there is an imbalance? Correct answer is no. Doesn't matter.
No.
Doesn't matter, because they have that now.
No, I think you're basically right. I mean, you don't want to change a playoff structure during the middle of a season, although CFL's done that. We'll ask Alex about that. I can't imagine.
We're
going to
be asking Alex a lot of things.
Well, he's here for two segments.
Yeah, but we have to ask him about something. His baseball
team. We can only talk about Greek food and his tie for
And the fact that
a while.
You know,
that won't take us that long.
Are the cheap bastards at Rogers actually not giving him the money that he wants? I mean, this is what we need to know.
He's regretting this right now. Unfortunately, the cheap bastards at Rogers are the ones who are giving all the money to you, apparently.
Do you think I'm taking Alex's money?
I think the Blue Jays would have Prince there Fielder but, today.
There but for me goes you, Darvish.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to put the pressure on him today. We're going to get that number out of him. How much did you bid on you, Darvish?
I want to know.
We're going to put the pressure on him. I'm going to muscle him.
Well, he's going to come. You know what he's going to come back
with? I know what he's going to try.
I think we'll barricade the door and not let him out until he tells us. I want to know. Inquiring minds.
We really want to know.
See, here's the thing, too, that we're going to talk about. You know, doing this program, I don't have as much feedback from the listener as I used to when we did phones every day. We did 1 hour every day.
Mm-hmm.
Now we do it sporadically. But I'll tell you.
People are not happy.
And you know, when we do phones, we have no idea what we don't give a topic. We have no idea. We don't tell you what to talk about. You can talk about anything you want. And the overwhelming topic of conversation this last couple of months has been Blue Jays, Rogers, spending money, free right. agents, right. sign players, what's going on. I think there's a real danger here of the tide turning.
Well, I think
we're reaching a tipping point.
Well, if the ball club does not play well, show signs of progress, then you may be into a real danger. But if the moves they have made, they've added three arms to the bullpen, added a closer.
Well, they added three arms to the bullpen last year. How'd that work out?
But if they added the better arms this year.
Well,
if the bench strength they've had, if Brett Cecil bounces back, if a Kyle Drabek shows he can pitch in the majors, if Colby Rasmus shows he's a better player than he was when he was here briefly, if.
That's what I was just going to do, see? That's
sure.
Every sentence
but
there was
an if. That's what you do with every young team, right? That's what the Edmonton Oilers were thinking going into this season. That's what the Toronto Raptors are hoping that's going to carry them forward. If you're going to build a young team, then you do it with the idea was they're going to get incrementally better. And by the time they get to a certain level, then you add a couple of pieces and away you go. Bob's your uncle.
Well, okay, and I subscribe to that theory, but the question, there's two other factors that weigh in. Number one, are they at that point?
I would say no.
Well, that's your opinion. You're entitled to that view.
You would say yes.
I would say more yes last year.
It's not a skill testing question, Bob. Answer the question.
More yes last year. I thought they were closer last year.
So you think they're farther away now?
I have more questions this year than I did last year.
It's interesting.
Because, you have a third baseman going into a sophomore year. I hate sophomore years.
So you were not impressed with Brett Laurie.
Oh no, he was stunningly impressive. Okay. But we have seen many, many times guys struggle in their second year. Aaron Sebia is going into his second year. Morrow was in his second year last year, didn't have as good a season. Mm-hmm. Brett Cecil comes off a 15-win season and is in the minors right. last year.
Hey,
we don't know where he's going. McGowan isn't the pitcher before the injury, but we have high hopes, but no expectations of him. So there's a center fielder who came with much right. fanfare from St. Louis. Was he any good last year? Yet.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Blue Jay fans have already seen this film. They saw it when Aaron Hill was supposed to be the future and Alex Rios was supposed to be the future.
Yes, you are correct.
And they turned out not to be the future.
That is correct.
And that's why if there are Blue Jay fans who watched that go through and saw it not happen, they may be less inclined to take the current program on faith.
Right.
So, which is probably accounts, and I think Mr. Anthopoulos will probably acknowledge that he's got a few nasty emails saying, what the?
Well, we're going to see. Let's shut up. Mostly, let's have you shut up, and Alex Anthopoulos will join us next when Primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet.
Sportsnet tonight. Tonight at 9. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Past the hour. It's Primetime on The Fan and Sportsnet for Thursday, January the 12th, 2012. Later, Glenn Healy, John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports, their baseball analyst, and the Reverend Andrew Sheldon will join us. He believes Tim Tebow's words and actions are problematic, suggesting that God has an opinion. Well, I'm just the guy to conduct that conversation. Well, look what the cat dragged in. Here he is, the managing general of the Toronto Blue Jays. Here is Alex Anthopoulos. Well, Tikanis, and a happy new year to you.
Kala, glad to be here, and excited to get started. This will be, I expect it to be very interesting, but say I saw clips of Brian Burke last night, and thought he did a hell of a job.
Now, when you say interesting, are you talking about the season or just this conversation?
No, I think this conversation will be interesting. Really? I expect it just from you guys got me teed up a little bit when I came in. I got the pink tie. You wearing sunglasses indoors.
No, no.
Damien's got a nice little scarf going. I think we're ready to go.
Oh, good. It's going to be one of those.
It's going to be one of those. Let me take my jacket off.
I'm there trying to respond, and I'm on mute, and you guys are firing away.
I know. We like that.
We're especially good at that. So...
Should we just start right in?
Oh, yeah.
Start pounding on
it? So much time. Only so much time.
Look, we're tired of hearing about what you won't say. Did you go after Yu Darvish?
Right. Come out swinging.
It's over. Look.
I understand.
It's over.
I get it.
You can't undo it.
I understand. He's not signed yet. And I know the Rangers, I'm sure, are working to try to get something done. I guess one thing I said early on in the offseason, I continued to maintain it. People asked about offseason, free agency, all that kind of stuff. I think we said you will most likely not see us go after big money, big market free agents, i.e. $100 million, things like that. If Yu Darvish ends up in that price range, which just from the post and what it may cost to sign, who knows where it ends up, but it should be pretty close. You would assume it'd be in that range just based off of Dice K.
Right.
I think that would fall into the category of you're probably not going to see us doing things like that. And that was said at our event, myself and Paul. I mean, we talked about it. We were going to probably go after trades. Now, again, things come up. Something makes a lot of sense. We're going to go out and end up doing that. But we didn't necessarily see a whole lot of value or players that were going to fit for us with where we were that were going to be really large, large dollars. They just weren't going to work with the way we're set up right now.
Any idea what that answer meant?
That's skating, guys. Hockey.
No idea.
No, I mean, the answer is either they didn't bid or the bid was tangibly lower than the 50 million.
But what I can tell you this is from a strategy standpoint, just being objective about this, I think when it comes to the Darvish bid, I think you have to look at it one of two ways. Dice K was going to be the barometer, one way or the other. It's the only other
example. He was 100, right?
Right. Well, no, but just from a bid standpoint. Just from
the 50 bid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That was the number. So to me, you're either going to be above him. To what level? Whether it was 600,000 like the Rangers went above, 1 million, 2 million, 5 million, or if you were going to be below, you weren't going to be cute about it. I don't see any point, just from a strategy standpoint, why hover in the 47, 48, 49 range? Dice K is what you're working off of. So you're either in or you're out. You're either going over, and if you're not going over, you're not going to creep close to it. You're going to go well below.
So the next highest.
Maybe see if you can get them
I think that's ultimately. Yeah, I just don't. It doesn't make any sense to me if you're going to bid for a player like that, knowing that the number one comparable, which is what all this stuff is about, for you to just come in a hair below him. I think the whole key to this thing is to get him, is to win the post, is to win the bid. So to sit there and hover around the Dice K mark, you need to make sure that you get him. If you feel you may have gone over by, let's say your number for the sake of argument was 47, 48, and you're going up maybe a million over what Dice K got, well, you may be able to get that money back when you're doing the contract for the player. So I know there was a lot written about us and other teams. I would guess that the team that went over, we know it was the Rangers. I would assume everyone else was well below. And I don't think from a strategy standpoint it would have made any sense to be close, because if you're close, why not just go over and make sure you get the guy done? And you can offset those dollars when you sign him to a contract, if you sign him to a contract, because if you're talking about 5 or 6 years in length, the extra 4 or 5 million you may have gone over, quote unquote, you certainly can absorb that over 5 or 6 years if the player's that important to you.
Was there a guy from Japan that went for around 30?
No, there was a guy that Oakland bid on. Kagawa got, I think, $46 million total package years ago, but the post was about 25. And the Oakland A's last year bid on a kid named Iwakuma, I think about 18 or 20. They don't necessarily divulge the numbers, but they come out and they end up being fairly accurate. So the numbers vary all over the place. I know there was a ton because I went over there. And it's just like when I go see someone for the draft, we all do this. Our scouts will be sending in emails. I saw the GM of the Colorado Rockies here to see this player. I saw the GM of Seattle there. And the assumption is just because you're there, well, they're going to take the player. GMs, I've worked for GMs. They go in to see a player. They don't like the player. So no one knows.
Is that what happened with you when you went to Japan?
I wouldn't say that. I guess what I would say is he's talented. There's no doubt about it. But you do have to make a decision. If you're thinking, look, Dice K is going to be the comparable here, is this a $100 million guy in your mind? And I think if you believe that, and you certainly have the funds to be able to do it, you're going to bid over Dice K.
Did you bid? Did you bid?
I think I've given you everything
Read
else.
Read my lips. Did you bid at all?
Don't look at me. I'm not helping.
I think I've said everything. I haven't just stayed consistent across the board.
He bid. He was well below. Let me ask you this, though. I think it was less the public reaction. I think you heard the public reaction,
sure.
which were
sure.
people were upset.
Sure.
Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
Blue Jay fans were upset.
Sure.
It was less about not getting this player than a perception out there that Rodgers isn't going to pony up the dough to give you the money to buy anybody, whether it's you, Darvish, or Albert Pujols, or Prince Fielder, or anybody. And there was the connection that you made in a comment with the number of people showing up at the ballpark, and that people are feeling, doesn't matter who's there, they're not going to spend.
Sure, no, and I guess it's there's a few things here. I know when we made the Santos trade, I came down and I talked about it, and by design, I want our fans to be able to think along with the front office and understand why we're doing things. So if we're making a decision, we like Sergio Santos a lot. But if there's a fan sitting back there saying, well, why didn't you just sign a free agent? If it was so difficult to give up a kid like Molina, why didn't you just spend the money and sign a free agent
right.
and keep Molina, which is absolutely fair. Well, the flip side to that argument is, if I have a certain amount of money to work with right now, and obviously we have more than one need and we have a lot of things we want to do, you have to be a little bit creative. And if that means having to give up a player and get someone who's under control or who's more affordable, and that frees up money to do some other things, then we have to do that. That's not a complaint. It's not whining. It's just reality.
But here's what people don't understand. I know where Nadir Muhammad's office is. I can take you there.
I've actually been.
It's up on 10.
Sure.
In the other building. We can arm wrestle him for the cash if you need it. Because what you're saying to us is that you have a budget, you're sticking with that budget, but what the fans are not hearing is that there is money there if you need that money.
Well, I guess what I would say is this, and I'm following up on that. You know, the comment about, well, fans, attendance, things like that. Paul's talked about this, and I know people have talked about, well, he talked about payrolls getting to certain levels. You know, my intent in everything is, as revenues climb, and what does that entail? It entails TV ratings. It entails attendance. It entails sales. It entails winning. The more I do my job and we as a front office do our jobs and we win, revenues will rise. And that's all. Now, ultimately, I may have come out and said it the wrong way. I'm not sure. But I've been consistent. I've always talked about the upside of the market, the upside of Toronto, that this isn't a market, rightfully so. And there's probably maybe one, and that might be the Cubs, where you open the doors no matter what the product is and the place is full. And that's just the reality of it. But the one thing this market has shown us, you put a competitive winning team on the field, you're drawing 4 million fans, and if it's not 4, it's going to be 3. TV ratings are going to be through the roof. The upside is huge. And there's other markets, Tampa being a great one, been to the World Series, won the AL East 2 out of 3 years. They've reached their peak, and they've basically capped out from a payroll standpoint. We have that upside, but we have to build to that level. That's part of the overall plan, and that's from an ownership standpoint, that's from a front office standpoint.
Let me ask you this then. If you'd said to Bob's buddy Nadir, they hang out together.
Well, it would be Paul doing that, yeah. But I understand.
But I mean, you're the general manager.
Sure.
You said, I need $60 million to go get you, Darvish. I need that money. It's the right thing. We will win. This is the right thing. Would they have given you the money?
Well, I guess what I would say, one, that conversation would be with Paul. And then me and Paul would go toe-to-toe, and he would say, are you going to guarantee that we're going to
right.
win? And if
say,
we guarantee and that we're going to win.
Convinced him.
Right, and if we guarantee that we're going to win, that results in, you know, increased revenues across the board. Obviously,
okay.
You win, everything changes. And then ultimately, he does the math, and he starts to line it all up, and then he can make the presentation to Nadir and so on. Does one player guarantee and ensure that you're going to win? I mean, we've seen it multiple times. We had Roy Halladay here. His last year here, we won 75 games. Since then, we won 85-81. We're a better team with Roy Halladay. There's no doubt about it. A-Rod won MVPs and gold gloves with the Rangers. They're a last-place club. Are we one player away? I don't ever believe we've ever been one player away. We're not there yet right now. Are we getting better? Is the team improving? There's no doubt about it.
That's not what I asked you. I said, would they give you the money?
I don't think it's as simple as...
If you could make the case...
I think, if I could make the case
yes.
that we will win,
Yes.
And it's, I can guarantee we'll win. Absolutely.
They will give you the money.
Absolutely. If I say we will win, we get this player, I guarantee you we will win. No doubt about it, because the rest will take care of itself. But how many times can you do that? Can you end up guaranteeing? Right. Now, there's a certain point in season. You're there. You know what the other teams are doing. You certainly know what your club is doing. You know how close you are. You can start doing the math and starting to break all that down. But right now, you know, I have a number that they'd like me to stay in an area. If we have to go above and beyond, there's a conversation that has to take place. And that's me with Paul first. And if it's going to go past Paul, then it goes to Nadir and so on. But I have an area that I'm generally asked to stay around, and you have to try to make that work, and that's fine. And you know, our payroll in right now, we're sitting in the high 80s right now. You know, we have room to move up. I know people have talked about us being, you know, significantly higher than that, the ability to do that. On a give and take, we have the ability to go above that. But it, like I said before, it's not a bottomless pit. And I think that's why it's important that there was so much talk from the American media, the national media, the Canadian media, that it's a bottomless pit. And that's just not the reality. And if it is, things change. If the money doesn't mean anything, well, then it doesn't. You can be a player for anybody. You keep all your prospects. You go sign all the free agents you want. And it doesn't matter. And if you make a mistake on a free agent, there's no opportunity cost. You're not tying up payroll because you can keep going. But that's not the reality.
That's the New York Yankees and to some extent the Boston Red Sox.
Correct.
Were you in the Papelbon discussions?
We talked about them internally.
How about externally?
Well, you know what? I will say this. There's been a lot. I mean, we explore. We actually go through the entire free agent class.
Sure.
Just because you don't, you know, you have your preconceived thoughts. You watch the games, obviously, and you follow.
But funny things happen.
Absolutely. And things change. And the more you start debating it, you start looking at it and trade options, it becomes more of a think tank. We probably spent 2 months at the end of the season just constantly going through video and everything else. So we were clearly looking for someone to close. But again, at the dollars that he got, how much of payroll does that chew up? And what does that allow us to do with other things we need to get done? So we talked about him. But in terms of offers that have been put out there on a million free agents, or, you know, I've read that we've lost out on players and things like that. I mean, that's not the case at all. A lot of players that we supposedly lost out on, either we didn't make an offer, we weren't involved, or we didn't ultimately decide to pay the price, because there were multiple players that we could have said yes to the proposals. There were deals that we had to say no to. And that's ultimately what it came down to. And sure, for the winner, slap some backs, everyone's excited, we got a player. 5-6 months down the road, reality shows up and we made a really bad trade. But it looked good in the short term.
Well, we got about a minute.
About a minute.
Well, we'll start this and then we'll keep it going, because then the prize acquisition of your offseason is Sergio Santos, who is, I think you'd agree with that?
Yeah, I'd say right now he's absolutely the most impactful guy. Sure.
He is, I think, generally described as very talented, but still raw. Do you think that next year he could potentially do for you what a Papelbon could have done? Or is that beyond his reach at this point in his career?
I don't think it's beyond his reach. I mean, he's raw because he hasn't had the role for a long time. But we've seen, you look at the Braves, they had three kids in that bullpen that just did a great job first year out, 40-plus saves. A guy like Santos saved 30 games last year, and he's just getting it going. And we have guys that feel very strongly about him, and obviously we got watch video and we've seen him live. We think he'll be an elite closer, and at the end of the day, there's certain closers you might be more comfortable with, but elite is elite, and getting the save is getting the save, and that's what it comes down to. And just from a scouting standpoint, we really have put closers into two tiers. We put in what we would call an average closer that can get the job done, won't necessarily dominate, but he'll get it done. You might worry and blow some saves, and then you have the guys that they're the elite guys. And they can range, but it's almost like getting a 95 on your exam rather than a 92. Mm-hmm. You're thrilled either way. You're doing really well. So Santos obviously doesn't have the track record of a guy Jonathan Papelbon, but we still think he's got a chance to be elite and be elite now.
Alex Anthopoulos is in studio with us, and we'll continue the conversation in a moment. It's primetime on The Fan and Sportsnet.
Nigel Reed and Bobby Arushi score big on The Soccer Show tonight at 8. Now, more of Bob McGowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Thirteen before the hour. Bob McGowan, Damian Cox, and Alex Anthopoulos, the managing general of the Toronto Blue Jays, in studio. All right, we're tight for time.
How much time we got?
5 minutes.
Okay,
six maybe. A couple of quick things. Let me go position by position. You're okay at first base. You re-signed your second baseman, correct?
Yeah, he's coming back. Either way, he's a signed player.
Okay, you're good at short. You have the kid at third.
Mm-hmm.
You're fine behind the plate, but you're gonna be forced to make a decision. The manager was in here. John was in here last week before, whenever it was. He thought Darno might be here before this season is out.
He's capable of it. There's no doubt about it. But at the same time, Double A is where he played last year. We expect him to go to Las Vegas, knock the walls down, probably win the MVP, you know, hit ungodly numbers. We know the offensive stats there are skewed. But that being said, I don't think we have a decision to make truly until the end of 12 at the earliest. Assuming Travis has a great year, JPR and Sebia repeated that level for 2 years. So that could happen as well. I mean, Travis Darno, so they're great players, and Travis may have a huge year, but the year that JPR and Sebia was winning the MVP in that league, John Buck was an all-star that year, and JP didn't come up until September, and he didn't play.
Yeah, so barring an injury...
he'll be down there the entire year.
Just so I understand, you doubt that Darno and Aaron Sebia could coexist. You wouldn't...
I guess I would say that I think ultimately their value is both behind the plate. And can they coexist? Sure. Could, you know, you open up DH at bats and so on. But long term, I think there's no doubt about it. They're both frontline all-star caliber guys. And long term, I just think it makes sense that, you know, one guy's going to catch the bulk of the games. But our hand isn't forced. I mean, at the earliest, 13 is the first time this may be an issue. And even at that point, we do have DH at bats.
Right field's okay.
It's all right.
Center field is a question mark that I didn't think would be a question mark.
No, and I understand Colby's stats obviously here were not strong at all, but I think there's a few components here. One, from a defensive standpoint, big upgrade for us. You know, you look at the seasons that our relievers and our starters had. We had, which for everyone who watched, I think it was pretty obvious, we had the worst outfield defense in baseball last year, and I think that's not a surprise. And if you look at the impact on the fly ball guys, Cecil, major fly ball guy, Morrow, major fly ball guy, Rauch, Francisco, and so on, that was an impact. Colby defensively, I thought, was outstanding. And before he got hit in the wrist, he had close to a 500, he had 249 or 248, but his slugging percentage was 480. He had a 740 OPS, which is very good for that position. Got hit in the wrist, played through it for a few more games. We finally put him on the DL. Couldn't get him too many rehab at-bats because New Hampshire was in the playoffs, so it was very sporadic. And we needed him from a defensive standpoint, so I think we brought him back a little too soon,
okay.
And he didn't get it going. But when before he got hurt, it was a 740 OPS, which was very solid. The upside's a lot greater than that. I think he's going to be fine.
What are you going to do in left?
Right now, I mean, Thames would have the leg up, but Travis is going to come in and compete with him. And, you know, they're two guys that we want to see that can be long-term guys. The talent and the ability is there for both players. But Thames ended the season as the left fielder, and he had a nice year for us. He's capable of being better. I think defensively he made strides. Travis, we need to get him going. I mean, we saw when he came back from the minors the first time, that two-week stretch, he was outstanding, and then he got back into bad habits.
If I said to you that Travis Snyder has significantly more upside than Thames does, with due respect, would you argue that point?
I'd say that Travis Snyder's a more complete player because of the defensive side of the ball. Oh. I think that's stating the obvious, that Travis is a better defensive player. I think they're both very good hitters. And I don't, you know, I guess I would debate you on whose bat is ultimately going to end up being more impactful, but Travis can do more things from a defensive standpoint. He's gotten better. I mean, the fact that he played some center field last year is just a credit to how hard he's worked. He stole some, before he got sent down, I think he stole about 10 bags for us. So he's really come into his own. But again, he's got a hit. And that if he doesn't, he won't be up here.
I was just going to say, that said, is this a make it or break it season for Travis Snyder as a Blue Jay?
Got to be getting close.
Sure, well, in a lot of ways, strictly because he's on his last option. And if he doesn't make the team out of spring training and he's optioned, then into 13, he has to be on the team or he gets posted to waivers. So this is a huge year for him. And it's right. I'm stating the obvious there, but if he's optioned out of spring training or at any point during the season and he burns that last option, he has to be on the 25-man roster or be on some other team. So this is a huge year for him. But again, he's going to be 24. He's incredibly... I remember Brandon Phillips. You know, he left the Indians. He became a very good player. Alex Gordon with the Kansas City Royals at 26, 27 clicked. Travis has got a world of ability. Sometimes it just takes a little bit of time. And in hindsight, coming up here at 20, being rushed through the minor leagues was probably not the best thing for him.
No, less than a minute and a half here, so I need some quick answers. Who are your five starters if the season started tomorrow?
I would say it would be Romero, Morrow, Cecil, Alvarez, and McGowan if we were to break today.
Is Cecil there because you think Cecil has turned the corner? Or is Cecil there because...
Oh, I think he's turned the corner. I think even he had a terrible start. But even when he came back after the, you know, when he came back from the minor leagues, he put up a 4.37 ERA for us. The year that he won all those games, I think he had a 4.2. And that was with the terrible outfield defense. And I remember one game where Corey Patterson and Batista collided at third base. That cost him 6 runs. There's a few other games where we just dropped balls and they weren't ruled errors. So, and he went 6 innings in almost every single start. So I think Brett, he's lost a ton of weight. He looks great. I just saw him on the caravan. I think he's going to have a huge year for us.
Is this your team? Is this your team as it sits here right now?
Right now, I would say yes, but I'm hopeful that something can break in 2 or 3 weeks. But as we sit here today, I think this will most likely be the team going into spring training.
Are there trade talks ongoing?
Sure. They're always
on. I know there always are.
No, but I guess I would say that they're always, they're certainly not as active as they were a month ago, but we're always continuing to have dialogue, and it may continue into spring training. I'd say once Feb 1 ends up rolling around, you just can't get a GM engaged. Mm-hmm. So we have another 2-3 weeks to people are still actively talking, but for some reason Feb 1 hits and just everyone's ready to go to camp.
What did you bid on you, Darvish?
I was going to say, we're going to go.
Who shot
Thelma?
That's right.
Thanks for coming by.
Enjoyed it.
Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Glenn Healy, John Paul Morosi, and the Reverend Andrew Sheldon. When Primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet.